Welcome to Voice, episode 65. This is a show all about Pokemon's video game championship series. I am your host, Steven Morioka, and I am here today with Alex Underhill.
Who?
And Justin Burns.
Hey, guys.
Hi, everyone. So, today we've got a nice show for you here. And, Alex, do you not remember who you are?
I lost myself along the way, but we'll figure it out by the end of the podcast, hopefully.
Okay, well, hopefully that trip from the Knoxville Regional didn't do too much damage to you, but yeah, you should be fine. Should be fine here. Now, we are here today with
we
our
certainly,
show.
We certainly are here today.
But maybe not tomorrow. That's guaranteed. Anyway, we're just going to go back to a little bit of news from a few weeks ago before we talk about the Knoxville Regional, which was kind of like the big main event. Big major over the weekend. Well, I don't know if you can call it big. It was kind of small in terms of attendance. And we'll talk about that later. But the few weeks ago, we had some events happen. And we actually have a question, which we're going to lead off with because it kind of pertains to that news, which we have talked a little bit about already. And this is a question that comes from Alex P., who says, "Hey, I love listening to your podcast as much as ever. I was wondering what you thought about the rumors in this article, which suggests that it would be easier to get competitive Pokemon in the next games." So this article that Alex is referring to is the Game Informer article, which talks about the personality trait being essentially changeable. And the question Alex asks continues that says, "Do you think breeding should be the only way, or would you like new features that make it easier to use specifically sentimental Pokemon in a competitive context? Thanks." So, what do we all think about, how do we feel about this? How would you answer Alex?
Wait, me Alex or him Alex? Anyway,
him Alex.
basically, we kind of covered this when we originally talked about the news, but the idea was that you can take some of your favorite Pokemon in-game, for example, the starter Pokemon that you pick. Most players aren't going to sit there soft resetting when they just started the game, and so they're just going to pick the starter of choice that they are most, attached to or the most like, and then they're going to run through the game with that. And most players, I think the large majority, will end up completing the game with that Pokemon on their team. And in most cases, it's not great to bring that Pokemon into competitive battle, so this is proposing, a feature that would make it easy to bring those Pokemon that you have an attachment to, maybe into competitive, because you're able to fix, as we've seen in the current games, you're able to fix the IVs of Pokemon, but now we can maybe change other things, such as the nature, and then maybe take things further. I personally just think the farther we can get from breeding, the better. If you imagine every time you were, I don't know if I made this comparison on the podcast or if this was when I was talking with somebody else off air, but just imagine if you were playing in a Smash tournament and every time you wanted to play a new character, you had to spend, upwards of like 15 hours just unlocking the new character, and none of that time spent was practicing with the new character, getting good with them, and understanding how they work. And instead, that time was spent just unlocking them. You show up to the tournament with no practice, but, you've got that character you wanted to try. That's kind of how I see breeding. And, if we could just move closer and closer to just being able to just click buttons, just pressing A to maximize, 252 EVs in this stat, I'd prefer to go that route. But I don't know. Where do you guys stand? Justin?
Yeah, I think, one of the biggest problems in VGC is the barrier of entry, which is basically, it takes a real long time to breed these Pokemon, especially in like restricted Pokemon formats, where we've got like, you've got to catch Groudon, you've got to catch Xerneas, and you've got to make sure their stats are as high as they can be, and then you've got to train them and get the right moves. And that's hard enough to do when you're able to, breed as many as you want. But when you've got to be soft resetting these big legendaries, it just becomes such a pain. And I think it's part of the reason why, in 2016, 2019, our regionals don't have as much attendance as they usually do.
Yeah, I didn't even think about mentioning that. They talk about breeding in this question, but really the main thing that is stopping us this year is these legendaries. And That, I guess, is another thing that this feature would help out a lot, is that while we do have, like, synchronized mechanics, making it easier to get the abilities on the legendary Pokemon that you want, that can still be a bit of a chore, a bit of a grind, and especially for those players that don't know about this mechanic, if there was something in-game that just kind of put it in your face, made it very clear, hey, I'm the in-person game to help, you know, change the personality of your Pokemon, and they're probably going to do some kind of roundabout way that doesn't explicitly say, I'm going to edit the nature of your Pokemon to what you want it to be. But I think they'll get the idea after they test it out, after they try this new feature, that that'll be really good. People will be able to like learn more about natures just in general, as if they have another thing in-game that kind of points to it.
Yeah, so I don't really just want raiding to be the only way to get our competitive Pokemon. You know, having these new features to be able to adjust natures and our, you know, stats is a very nice thing, because, you know, it in-game it does take a lot of time to build everything. So that can be really grinding, and you take away practice time and just, you know, time from your general life to do other fun things. But one of the things that I just, you know, really hope that I do want it to be easier to get competitive Pokemon, just as a, on a, you know, personal selfish level, but just for the community as well, right? It'll be very, a lot more attractive to newer players when the functions to be able to get your Pokemon are a lot easier than they are nowadays. And, you know, we've come a long way since the very beginning of getting your Pokemon through, you know, RNG Reporter, or having to, you know, go through all that process. But the easier you can make it in the game, it's going to be so much easier for newer players, for players who've been around for a long time who don't have to deal with this grind as much anymore. But, you know, it'd be great to have that sentimental Pokemon you've been using throughout your journey and just, you know, add them onto your team now that you can adjust their stats, and hopefully nature is that personality trait that they were referring to in that article from the interview. But I think we're all pretty much in agreement that, yes, it'd be nice to have competitive Pokemon be a lot easier in terms of that barrier to entry, as well as just access for all. But yeah, Alex P., thank you so much for sending us a question and the feedback. We really appreciate that a lot. And then we've got another question, but we're going to answer that at the end of the show here. So we'll stop at the start at the top of the show with a question and at the bottom of the show with a question. So, you know, one of the things that also happened a few weeks ago along with this article was the, this was announced as well beforehand, but there was a 24-hour Pokemon live stream that, you know, was official. It was an official thing, streamed by Pokemon, just showing a new region of Galar known as the Glimwood Tangle. And I was wondering, you know, how much of this were the two of you able to catch? Because I didn't really get a chance to watch most of it at all, and like I didn't bother with any of that either. I heard a lot of, you know, funny things about it, but as an end result, we ended up getting a reveal of a new Pokemon, well, a new Galarian form in Ponyta, and officially revealed later on that following week of that was, in fact, a Galarian Ponyta. It's got a psychic type, you know, just it's a resident of Galar. It's a Shield exclusive as well. So let's just talk about, you know, the whole stream, this whole process, and eventually we can talk about Ponyta as well.
I'm going to be completely honest, I did not watch any of the stream at all.
Yeah, I was in the same boat.
Steven was making it sound like really appetizing, like, oh, did you guys catch any of it? Like, oh, I was unfortunate to miss it, and I'm like...
It was like a nature watch, that was like the whole part of it. It's like, you watch wildlife out there, just like you do on the stream, but they didn't really make it all that appealing, to be honest. Like, From what I was hearing from everyone else watching it, it sounded really boring.
Oh, it was... I mean, so I remembered it, I think, like 2 hours in. I was like, oh, yeah, that's today. And so I opened it up on YouTube, and YouTube allows you to just kind of scrub through, going back and just checking all the frames, the timestamps, or what do you call them? I guess the frames. I don't know. And the preview, basically. And I just kept looking, and I was like, there's nothing happening. It's just been the same image the whole time. Like, I think the first 2 hours, I'm not gonna, like, don't assume I'm correct, but I think that nothing happened for all that time, and it just seems like a waste of everybody's time, but they had so many people watching this.
Yeah, it was really funny. It seemed like something that, you know, people wouldn't enjoy, but it was a good, you know, I guess publicity stunt I don't want to call it that exactly, but, you know, people were interested in it. People were, you know,
it's a new marketing tactic.
Yeah, they were like editing characters onto the you know, screenshot of the forest, and they were posting them on Twitter. It was really funny.
Oh yeah, it was so personally. It was huge for meme potential. You have that's a good point. Like, so many people had stuff to do with it. Yeah, it was basically a template for a meme. Just this whole time, it was like ripe for the picking for those, like, for those 24 hours, because I don't think much of it's been talked about since. But it was a good 24 hours.
Yeah. You really got to feel bad for you know, people like Joe Merrick that, you know, cover you know, Pokemon news, and they had to make sure they had the, you know, latest scoop immediately, so they were all, you know, watching the stream for the entire 24 hours.
Yeah, so I think that's a fair point for anyone who is, you know, has to cover Pokemon news essentially and needed to keep an eye on this essentially Nature Watch for that all that time. But I thought it was, you know, it was an interesting marketing strategy, and it's worked out okay. My thing with it is, I'm just wondering who was foolish enough who wasn't covering the actual news, who was watching this, you know, like, religiously.
It was like 45,000 people, dude.
It's really silly. Like, if you were sitting there trying to watch it the whole time, like, dedicating your actual time to this, like, I don't understand. Just put it on in the background, do something else. I don't get it.
You don't even need to watch it. Like, honestly, it's going to be just, like, something you find the highlights of. You know, you leave it to the people who are meant to cover this, and they take care of it. I mean, they're gonna give you what you're actually looking for in a much more concise time that, you know, doesn't waste your own time. But, so, I think
that
people...
that's what I did, so...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think we all kind of did it right. Just, you know, wait till the news comes and then check it out. But I don't want us to brush past this without covering the, I guess, main issue that a lot of people are having with this. Not the main issue besides the whole 24-hour thing, but I saw a lot of people talking about that it was supposed to be a fairy type. And a lot of people took issue with this in that it was a psychic type. And I wanted to see where you guys stood on that that discussion.
I think I'm fine with it not being a fairy type. Like, maybe it does kind of look like it should be, but, you know, psychic also kind of makes sense, so I'm not too upset.
I mean, I would rather have it be a fairy type. It still has a chance to, it's still going to evolve into Rapidash, right? So Rapidash still has a chance to make the wrongs right here, to right the wrongs.
Oh, okay,
rather.
Okay.
This Ponyta should be a fairy type. You know, it's living in a little forest like this, so it really should be
and
a fairy type.
And I think you are living in a cave. You are living under a rock, Steven, because, you know, it can totally just be a psychic type. Like, why does everything that's, like, fluffy and cute have to be fairy now? We've, like, littered the games with fairies now. Like, fairy isn't even the most uncommon type. I was actually having a discussion with this about this at work, so I had to Google it myself. Ice is the most uncommon type of Pokemon, and so we've got plenty enough fairies. We don't need to populate the game with any more. They've caught up. They're here. Now we can just make things, like, fun. I don't know. I think psychic's interesting.
Now, I just have to say, we did see another Pokemon on the stream, and it hasn't been revealed yet. And the Pokemon was also in the demo. So please, can we just see what Impidimp looks like now, Pokemon?
Yeah, Impidimp made some cameos over this thing, and there's still no, like, official reveal about this Pokemon.
Why are people making news about this? Like, is it really? I guess, yeah, we don't know anything about it, but we know. We do, though. It's just, I guess, they never officially announced it. That's what people are making the big, like, stink over it is.
Yeah, we saw, like, one trainer uses it in the demo.
And, okay, and so that's
so we
it.
Know it's a dark and fairy type, and that's it.
Oh, okay. I guess I just kind of forgot. So, like, Impidimp, we got the information on Impidimp the same time we got information on Yamper, but Yamper ended up getting, like, a announcement.
Yeah, because Yamper was in the demo, too, and then they actually revealed it, but they haven't said anything about Impidimp yet.
Okay. Well, I think it's fun that way, and also I'm just more of an advocate for, like, I'm gonna eat up every bit of information that they release, because I just don't think I'm going to be able to avoid it as a person that's so integrated into the Pokemon community, especially the VGC community, that I'm just going to accept that anything that Pokemon posts, I'm going to follow. I do avoid, like, most leaks, though, but I'm fine with like there being less information because it just leaves more surprises for when the games come out. There's two last things that I think we need to touch on about Ponyta before we move past it, and it is one, it's got a new signature ability called Pastel Veil. Pastel Veil. All right, so Pastel Veil.
Pasta Veil.
It's like some deer meat or some deer. No, that's the same thing. Never mind.
You mean horse meat?
No, what? Hold
it's
on.
It's a horse.
Oh, okay, okay. Horse. I thought you were saying that veal was horse meat. I was like, what are you?
No, Ponyta's the horse.
It's a unique horn Pokemon.
It is that not too. A horse. It is a unique horn. And, sorry.
I hope everyone catches that joke. That was very clever. Very funny.
We are getting all kinds of mixed up and off track, but Pastel Veil is the new ability of this Galarian Ponyta, and it prevents the poisoning of itself and its partner, as well as curing poison upon entering the battle. I just personally don't see this being that great.
I think it could be cool on, like, maybe if you have a team more focused on, you know, being bulkier than your opponent's team and just kind of, you know, outlasting. Because, you know, we've seen some Pokemon use the move Toxic a lot, especially in, like, you know, VGC 15 or VGC 17, where there's really a lot of bulky Pokemon like Cresselia or Porygon 2. So I think it does have, you know, its niche there, but, you know, other than that, I don't see it being that great.
Yeah, I really just see this. When we talk about this ability more, it kind of makes sense that this Pokemon is really just designed to hit against poison types. You know, it's going to be super effective with the psychic type against them and even cure poison from essentially their side of the field. So I guess they didn't want to make it fairy because then it kind of goes against the point of its ability. So mm-hmm. I don't really know what practical use this really has at the moment. Because like Justin just mentioned, we don't really see poison too often, just from Toxic, really, from those bulkier Pokemon. And if you're going to be curing poison, it's going to be from, like, the random sludge bombs or those kind of things.
True.
Poison jabs, you know, poison jab, sludge bomb, all that. Other than that, like, you know, this Ponyta is a psychic type. I'm be very surprised if it does not gain some other secondary type, whether it's fire or fairy. So, if it stays pure psychic, that'll be, you know, I'd be surprised.
Could be flying. Could evolve into a Pegasus.
Oh, goody, a psychic flying. That's a lot of weaknesses.
It is a lot of weaknesses. So, lastly, before we move on from the Ponyta, I just wanted to mention that it is a Shield exclusive. So, I'm a Sword boy. I will not be getting this pony, this little horsey guy. But, I'm wondering what it means will be its equivalent, because I can't imagine that it is Farfetch'd Sirfetch'd, which we know is a sword exclusive at this point. I'm imagining that they're both going to have different parallels in the game that are not each other.
And you know what? I like that. I like that they haven't revealed, you know, the exact parallels for one another, because you know, it leaves the wonder still for us in the out here in the field. And I am excited to see, you know, what other Galarian forms they do have for us.
Yeah, it's exciting. They revealed a ton during the Sun and Moon pre-release cycle, and while it was hype, we didn't really get many surprises when the games came out. So it is kind of nice that they are scaling back on the reveals, and you know they are being pretty clever with the reveals now. So it still is an exciting, you know, pre-release cycle.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, just counting up the Sword and Shield Pokédex right now, we have 22 Pokémon officially announced for Sword and Shield, you know, new either Generation 8 Pokémon or Galarian forms, and that does not include Impidimp, so that makes 23 as well. So, it's not really that much, to be honest, so there's still going to be a lot of surprises when we finally get our hands on the game, in a month, actually. So, coming up very soon.
Hoo boy.
Yeah, does that scare you a little bit?
I'm excited. I'm very excited. To go off on one more tangent. Justin and I were talking a lot in chat today, and he brought to my attention an interesting theory that I had not quite put two and two together, but it makes a lot of sense, and it's referring to the max moves that Pokemon will be having. and what their secondary effects are. We've seen a lot of them, but not all of them have been confirmed. But, you know, the electric max move sets up electric terrain, and the water max move sets up rain. The normal max move lowers the opponent's speed. Justin, you went ahead and kind of like did the math and put it all together, and you've got a idea of what all the max moves will kind of follow, what kind of pattern they're going to follow?
Yeah, so the generic max moves, a lot of people have noticed this actually, but you know, there's obviously going to be a generic max move for every type, right? And so we've got 18 types. So I think it's right now, since we know 13 of them, it's pretty safe to assume that, you know, four of them are going to set up the four weathers, four of them are going to set up the four terrains, five of them are going to drop each of the, like, each stat on the opponent, and then five of them are going to, you know, raise each stat that your allies have. And that adds up to, you know, perfectly 18. So it would make sense for, you know, those 18 generic moves to have those effects.
Okay. That was not the direction I thought this conversation was going. I thought you were going to bring up...
What did you want? I thought it was really cool.
No, that is a really good conversation. I thought you were somehow tying this back to the Pastel Veil Ponyta, saying how, like, the poison one might, like, I don't know if this has been revealed yet, but the poison max move would, like, set up toxic spikes or just poison everything on the field for, you know.
No, this is what actually sparked the discussion. I think, Justin, we talked about this together over the weekend, and I maybe told you this. I was like, I think the poison one's going to set up toxic spikes. It'll make Ponyta cool. And then you were like, no, Alex, there's something that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, we do have some cool Gigantamax moves.
So that's really...
Oh, actually, yeah, that's a good point. They could fall into the Gigantamax Pokemon's moves there. Those
yes.
will have separate effects. Okay, I gotcha. I follow you there. But yeah, that's a really good theory. You know, I would put a lot of money on saying that would probably be an accurate one.
So... That's it for the Sword and Shield stuff that I think we wanted to talk about. And now we can finally talk about the straight VGC stuff that we've been putting off until this point. But over the past weekend...
Ultra Series. All right, let's
like,
do
much
it.
Much like our regional prep.
What? Oh, yeah, that's true. We just got... Like, you know, the best strategy that most VGC players should follow is leave it to Raghav. He's great. But... Yeah, so over the weekend, the three of us went down to Knoxville. Well, not all of us went down. Justin, you went right.
Over. I went east, yes.
Yeah, you went over,
no,
right?
No, right.
Just a long way right. east, yeah.
Just over
just
the mountains.
Right.
But yeah, we all met there in the Tennessee city of Knoxville, and that was for a regional, a very tiny one. It had 67 players.
Wait, I thought it was announced
end.
At 68.
68. They added someone in at the last second.
I've heard all kinds of different numbers, so...
I mean, it was officially announced at the tournament. It was 68 Masters. I even wrote a note in my notebook.
Yeah, but we can't trust you. So...
Oh, is that so?
Anyway,
so
that
question,
led to us having...
I don't... Justin, were you in... Sorry, Alex. Justin, were you in the Kansas City Regional from 3 years ago?
In 2016, no, I did not go to that one.
Okay, because that one was also super small as well, and I can't remember if, like, it was the exact same number or we were somewhere, like, plus or minus one or two off of that. But very similar sized regionals for those two.
Yes, very much so.
I mean, like, just based on attendance for this, do we think it's a result of location, the format we're playing, just timing in the year, or... I don't know. What do you think kind of led up to this?
I think it's just, you know, a combination of a lot of factors that lead to, you know, low attendance like this.
Entry fees, the format, you know, Ultra Series not being a favorite amongst people. And as we talked about, legendaries are very hard to obtain. So not a lot of people are going to make new teams to come to these tournaments, especially when it's kind of in the middle of nowhere, Knoxville. Though it's like... decently big city, like it was a far drive for a lot of people is what it seemed like. So,
and all the gotcha. Students at the university would rather attend the football game.
Oh yeah, who ended up winning that, by the way? I still don't
Tennessee
know.
Tennessee actually won.
Oh cool.
Who are they
playing?
They upset Mississippi State University, who was I believe was 4-2 or something at the time. and Tennessee had a pretty bad record.
Okay, gotcha. So for anyone who isn't aware, this was an American football game played the same day as the regional, or the first day of the regional. And, you know, we got warnings from essentially the host of the event, Top Cut Events, saying like, hey, make sure you get here early. Here's all the like things we got to go through because of the football game. You know, we're going to be adding security, bag checks, all that. And, you know, just get on time with the parking situation and everything. So
parking was also very expensive.
Oh boy.
Parking was expensive? What?
Don't ask Steven. Steven parked for free.
We parked for free, oh, yes. We found a free parking garage. So
wow.
We did well there. In terms of parking, for myself, not actually at the tournament. So let's go ahead and talk about that. So I guess I'll start with me. You two are using the same team, so this will be a little bit easier to cover the two of you. But I was using a Kyogre Lunala team and ended up going 4-3 for 27th place. Yeah, I lost in round one, so not a great start. You never want to lose round one. Round one and then round four and round five. But, you know, I could have dropped going being X3 at that point, but I'm really glad I finished out the tournament, mainly because in the standings, we did end up seeing there was 1-4-3 that did make 16th place. So if I had dropped and then seen that, I would have been actually very more upset with myself than I was already at the time, because one of those 4-3s did make the, you know, essentially the cutoff for points. So, you know, there's a chance, so I had to stay in and go for it. So I'm really happy I stayed in. And yeah, I just want to hear what some of your runs were like.
Now hold on, hold on. Let's talk about these. No, you're not getting away. Hold on. Now, Steven, we're gonna be spilling our full beans here. I mean, our teams are posted on the VictoryRoadVGC.com website. People can find our six. I want to know what you used. You haven't even told me. I don't even know what six did you use. Kyogre, Lunala. Give me the rest. What are the other four?
I'm not the one who did well, though, so that's why it's not public. But I'll be fine telling you. It was those two. I had Celebence, Tapu Fini, Incineroar.
Yeah, that just sounds like your own fault. I was gonna say that to no matter what you said. So
I know. Let me say the Nihilego was very good. I really liked using it a lot, and a lot of people seem to struggle with it. So very good Pokemon. I did like having that on my team.
So yeah, you mentioned it earlier, but, Justin and I went on the same team. I kind of reached out to Justin early on after we had established that we would be staying in the same room. I just knew that not a lot of people cared about Ultra Series right now, and the normal people that I team build with, were kind of just taking it easy. So I was like, hey, Justin, do you want to like kind of care with me? And I don't know, Justin and I tried our best to care, and it ended up going okay, but we pretty much just ended up playing other video games to practice and, well, not practice then, because it's not practicing if you're playing other games.
I'm trying to find the logic in that statement. There's nothing there.
But we've ended up playing other games instead and ended up resorting to, you know, crying and begging on our knees, saying, Raghav, let us into the Rayogre Discord. Which he did, and we were able to take advantage of Raghav's really good team building.
Wait. So Raghav has to let you into this thing? Is that right?
Yeah, as he's the owner of the infamous Rayogre Discord, he has
okay,
to prove
so I would
entry.
I would call that an airlocked Discord.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Is that really what she were? That was the payout.
Yes.
Okay.
That was the payout. Just roll with it.
I am crying a primordial sea of tears because of how bad that joke was. Now, the full six that Justin and I ended up bringing to the tournament was Primal Kyogre, Mega Rayquaza, Mega Metagross, Tapu Koko, Incineroar, and Celesteela. And it's honestly, if you look at it, it's a Rayogre team that's pretty plain to look at. The highlight, I would say, is just that there are two steel types. Not a lot of them run double steel. We had both Metagross and Celesteela. I don't know. What are some of your thoughts on the team, Justin?
I would say that the main highlight is that we had no Z-move.
Ooh, that's true too. That is true. So, ended up being Assault Vest Tapu Koko because, I think it actually helps out a lot against other opposing Tapu Koko. People put Tapu Koko on their team to help against Rayogre, and it can be an annoying Pokemon to deal with. But there are a variety of ways that our own Tapu Koko can disable opposing Tapu Koko. One such way is using the Electroweb move, so that way you slow the opponent's Koko down, and then your Kyogre can take it out with like a Water Spout. Or another fun play that I was able to make happen in a Rayogre mirror against Quentin was I skydropped his Koko as his Crobat set up Tailwind, and then the Koko could not move because it was fast in Tailwind, and I used Water Spout to take out his Koko. But other than that, like, you know, that's normally the Pokemon that would be carrying our Z-move is that Tapu Koko. Maybe an Incineroar if we considered ourselves Lunala weak. Maybe we should have, because that's ended up being my ultimate defeat. But I ended up losing to James Evans, who ended up finishing in 7th place, and Joseph Ugarte, who finished in 3rd place in Swiss. But I was thinking my schedule was looking pretty good, so I thought I would make it into the cut anyway, and sure enough, I did. At 6th seed, I was the highest 5-2, so I actually did not have a lot to worry about. My schedule was pretty strong. Justin also finished with a 5-2 record, but I'll let him talk about his run.
Yeah, I was thinking I should talk about my run first, since, you know, we want to save the best run for last. well, like Alex said, I did finish with a 5-2 record, which is kind of a spoiler because I actually lost my first run. I ended up playing a Rayogre mirror. And I thought, you know, my Electroweb Assault Vest Koko would be pretty good in the matchup. However, my opponent also had Electroweb Koko that had Fairy and Z. So he was able to, you know, pressure my Kyogre and my Tapu Koko with, you know, Electroweb and Volt Switch very well. And then he also pressured my Rayquaza very well with the Ferium. And I wasn't able to do that with my Koko, so... that ended up being the, you know, decider in the matchup, and it did go to game 3, and my opponent did play real well, but I ended up, you know, getting defeated. I did win my round 2. Round 3, I faced,
a real doozy.
Yeah, a pretty popular streamer. I think his username's That's a Plus One. He's well known for using, you know, weird teams. He did have that top cut with the Butterfree. At this regional, he had, you know, he had Gothitelle and Palkia, which Palkia itself is really tough for Rayogre to take care of. And the fact that, you know, he had Gothitelle meant he could, you know, trap in my Rayquaza or Kyogre and deal with it pretty well with the Palkia set. And he also had Groudon, so he could also, you know, trap my Kyogre in with Gothitelle and Groudon. And I wasn't able to do very much. And, you know, I did put up my best fight, but, you know, his team was real good against my team. He played it real well. He did make some good calls towards the ends of the games, and so he ended up beating me. And I dropped to 1-2, and I was pretty much out of it, since, you know, it's hard to salvage your resistance when you lose early. But I did manage to win out. Many of my games went to game 3. In fact, I went 1-6. In game ones at that regional, so most of my sets I was having to claw back and, you know, win game 2 and 3, but I did end up, you know, winning out, getting to 5-2, and that was good enough for championship points, which I'm pretty happy with, considering my motivation to, you know, play Ultra Series isn't that high right now.
Yeah, I mean, you got to take what you can get here. And like you're saying, your resistance was kind of shot after kind of losing in earlier rounds. And you're right, because you did end up with the lowest 5-2 record. But you still got the points, which is the key thing here.
Yeah, of course. And it is funny to note that the Alex and I used the same teams and ended up with being the highest 5-2 and the lowest 5-2.
That's true. It's like, you know, it's like a sandwich almost.
Yeah, yeah. a schedule sandwich or something like that.
Yeah. I just really wanted to quickly point out, because the two of you did, the three people I lost to. So, my first round loss was to Yihui Shu. That's the Canadian player. The Chinese player in Canada right now, right? I lost to him round one. You know, made a silly mistake. I had the game locked, but I honestly threw the game in game three there. And then round four, I played James Evans, who I lost to in three games. And then the round after that, after the lunch break we had, I lost to Leonard Kraft the third. And you know, he destroyed me. So you know, good games to everybody. And those are my people. But Alex, what were you going to segue to us to?
I don't know where I was segueing us, but I will mention one thing is that I did play somebody I knew every round, which was kind of cool. I also got to play on stream round two. One of the people that we were most worried going into the tournament about was Brady Smith, just using the Kartana Zerndon team. We were like, okay, we need to be solid against this team. And in the first round, I was able to play Brady, and I was already pretty nervous. Like, I was like, where's Justin? I need to talk to Justin right now. And thankfully, it ended up going very well, and so that was a good confidence booster from the start. But my run, I did actually make it into the top cut. I was very excited about this because I did not cut, three Ultra events I went to. I went to two internats and a regional, just the one, I believe, Madison. And, and I guess I didn't cut Worlds, you know. Ugh, can't believe it. Unforgivable. And so I was able to cut an Ultra Series event, albeit a very small one. It still felt very good. You know, everybody was here trying their hardest to, because I think it was still a pretty stacked tournament. There was a lot of names. As I mentioned, I played somebody I knew every round. So there was a lot of notable people here, a lot of experienced players. And in the top cut, I was paired up against Joe Castagliola. I asked him how to pronounce his last name. When we were playing each other, and as far as I can remember, he said the GL makes a Y sound, but I think so. I think it's Joey Castagliola or something.
I can see that. Sure.
Cause he said it's Italian, but anyway, C9 Life Orb is the username. So I'm going to call him Life Orb, but, Life Orb, I ended up playing him and, he was probably the talk of the tournament, I would say, because he was using a Mega Gallade. And, oh, man, I was very scared because I didn't know exactly what it was going to do. There was a lot of information that I was just kind of missing when I was preparing for my top cut match. I didn't know pretty much anything about the Smeargle set. I didn't know what the Lunala's set was. I didn't know if it was Tailwind, Wideguard, Roar, or Psych Up or anything like that. But I prepared for Psych Up because that was the worst-case scenario, which is what it ended up being. And then the Glade, I did not know its filler move outside of Helping Hand, Close Combat, and Protect. And so I spent a bit of time fearing that. Ended up being Wide Guard, which was not too threatening in the scenario that it was used. But I ended up playing a bunch of practice games, and it was just going relatively poorly to the point that I was just kind of like, well, let's just see what happens. And pretty much all six of my Pokemon were relevant in the matchup. They were all good. So I just decided, okay, these are the four I'm bringing in the first game, but I don't know what I'm going to do to game two or game three. I'm just going to see if I can trust my gut. And I won game one convincingly. Game two, I had a game plan that went to turn 1.5 before I realized, no, this just loses. I clicked my move at the end of turn one, and I was like, that was really bad, Alex. What are you doing? And then immediately into game three, ultimately what it came down to in game three was if I had gotten one of two flinches, I think I would have been able to take the game with the Iron Head from Metagross. Unfortunately, was not able to get them. For the players that really dread facing Kang Torn, the odds are the exact same as Kangaskhan using Bite, where it is a 51-49 in the Kangaskhan's favor. In this case, the Iron Head was in the favor of Metagross, 51-49, but it's really just a coin toss, and didn't go my way, so Joe ends up taking the set, and it was a really well-played game, I think, on both ends. It was able to go to game three. I think one of the more entertaining sets in the top cut.
Yeah, one of the coolest things about Joey's team here is, of course, the Gallade stands out for everybody, right? It's that Mega in there. It's very unique. But the just looking at it as a whole, the Gallade, Crobat, or the Mega Gallade, the Crobat, and the Lunala all have immunity to essentially fake out, unless, you know, you're scrappy for the Lunala. But, you know, most of Joey's team does not even have to worry about that at all. So, you know, I really like Gallade's placement on this team, especially with the inner focus ability, because it doesn't have to worry about Incineroar, can hit back immediately. And I just wonder if all of his opponents were aware that Mega Gallade does have that ability. And maybe they just forget because they see it in the base form to start. I just wonder how many people he caught off by surprise with that. I don't really see this being picked up too much just by, you know, the general metagame. It's kind of like the whole Metachamp situation. You know, they share the same typing and everything.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And yeah, the immunity to fake out, a lot of the Zernala teams that we see take advantage of Tapu Lele on their team to block fake outs. In this case, it just ended up being that a lot of the Pokemon on the team were immune to fake out. So it's really cool that that was a different route, a different approach to that. As well as Mega Lucario is the Pokemon we normally see in a slot like this. We even see Xiangjun Peng in top four with a Mega Lucario on his team. And the thing about Mega Lucario is it has the inner focus ability, but only when it is not Mega Evolved. And when it is not Mega Evolved, it cannot one-shot an Incineroar. However, when Gallade Mega Evolves, it can most definitely one-shot an Incineroar. And so that is kind of the nice thing about Mega Gallade, is it can both it can attack while not fearing Fake Out and delete the Incineroar if need be.
Yeah, it's definitely a really, really interesting team. I'm actually friends with Joey, so he had showed me the team a few, you know, I guess a week or two ago, and because of that, I was not able to help Alex prepare for his matchup. But I thought it was pretty interesting, you know, a while back, and it was, I definitely thought it would be a team that he could do well with, especially since, you know, he's known for using a lot of, you know, hyper offensive Lunala and Xerneas stuff. And what's interesting is that it, besides the Mega Gallade, all the Pokemon on the team were, you know, exactly the same as what Ashton and Jeremy used to take last year's Tennessee Regional by storm. And the Pokemon that they had over Gallade was also another fighting type in Toxicroak. So I just think it's really interesting that, you know, that archetype has carried over into Ultra Series and, you know, is still, you know, a really threatening team.
Yeah, it was just 1 year ago that Ashton and J-Rod were able to take Zernala to the top, although unfortunately Zernala did not make it all the way to the top this year. There were two of them in the cut, but one lost it out in top four, and then Life Orb, who was able to beat me in top eight, made it to finals to play against none other than Kyle Livinghouse, who the both of them drove down together. They are, you know, good friends, good builders. They build together as far as I can understand. And yes, they are good builders. Kyle ended up taking it in the finals with none other than standard Kang Torn. In fact, it is the exact same six that Paul Chua won the other regional with.
Yeah, so now that team has won two regionals in a row. So we're in a similar situation to Sun Series where, you know, Torn Ogre was taking all the regionals. So maybe now we do have a potential best team in the format, even though I don't think it's quite as dominant over, you know, so the teams like, you know, maybe teams in the past, such as Big Six. But it's definitely strong enough that it's able to consistently make these deep runs when they're used by good players. And, you know, maybe the teams that are strong against them aren't quite good enough to make it through Swiss, where you're not always going to be playing, you know, Kang, Torn, Zerndon every round.
Yeah, I think just overall this team, this archetype has shown a lot of consistency with it. So people need to be preparing for this. And even when still prepared, when piloted with the correct person and player with a high skill level, that's going to be a very difficult game for you to play against them, that match. So just to round it out here with the rest of the tournament, you know, Kyle ended up winning with, we had four Groudon Xerneas in total in the top eight cut here. We had two Xerneas and Lunala, and then we had a Groudon Yveltal and Alex's Rayquaza Kyogre here. So we saw Kyle beat Joey Castagliola in the finals. We had Joseph Ugarte in third, Chang Jung Peng in fourth, Keith Boone in fifth, Alex finished in sixth, James Evans in seventh, and Jeremy Rodriguez in eighth place there. So, you know, really solid cut there. And one other thing I just wanted to point out, just if for anyone who is not aware, both Kyle and Joey were in a car accident prior to getting to the event. So they pretty much got no sleep heading into it. They, you know, had quite the experience going into that event. So, you know, they fought through all that adversity, ended up winning or, you know, making it to finals together like that. So I think that's a really neat story to point out there. Not really something needed to joke about or anything, because that is a very, you know, if that's a devastating experience, which they're still going to have to, you know, deal with the ramifications of all that. But, you know, really good on them to, you know, persevere through all that that weekend.
And So one last thing that I did just kind of want to say about the tournament in general is that I think Justin would be okay with me kind of peeling back about our approach to the event. And basically, we were looking at this and we said, well, we really don't want to lose to Groudon Xerneas. We really don't want to lose to Groudon Yveltal. So, you know, what do we do to make sure that we just have a solid matchup against that most of all? Because I think that was the team we were most worried about going in.
Yeah, we were definitely worried about not just teams, but, you know, maybe even specific players. You know, a lot of the top players recently have been using Zerndon, and especially, you know, like Joseph Ugarte, who's one of Alex's locals, has had a very strong start to the season. So we definitely wanted to make sure we had a Groudon Yveltal matchup, because he's very well known for, you know, using his team. Alex ended up losing to him, but from what I hear, I think, you know, maybe the matchup still might be favorable to us. You know, maybe Alex can talk more about that, but.
Yeah, it's still a positive matchup. I did end up, like I said, we wanted to beat Zerndon and Yveldon. I still did end up losing a game to each of them, as well as the Zernala that ended up knocking me out of top cut. But Joseph Ugarte just ended up playing very well, making a lot of good calls, and, you know, took it in three games. Against James Evans, also another very close set. I got very greedy in game one, played better in game two, and then lost on an Origin Pulse miss in game three, which is a rather unfortunate way to go. But, you know, for him to bring it to something like that means that I could have maybe played the set a bit better. So both just tough losses, but I well played to both of them. And then, yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, we did take that very, like, player-centric approach to the event, is that we knew that a lot of the top players coming to the event, and we just kind of thought, well, why don't we design our team around them instead of just the general metagame?
Yeah, and I do think it ended up working well out, as both of us were able to, you know, I got top 16 and he got top 8. So I am happy with, you know, how we prepared for the event, especially in, you know, such weird circumstances like a regional as small as this.
Cool. So I'm glad to hear that approach had worked out, because I heard about the two of you doing this, you know, at the regional, at the event about this. So, I imagine the approach is going to take, going to be a little bit different if, assuming you two, let's just assume that, you know, the two of you would also go to Dallas, the first North American regional on Sword and Shield. I'm assuming the approach is going to be a little bit different, because that tournament is going to be packed.
Yeah, I'm never working with Justin Burns again.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't ever, I can't ever build with Alex. No way. It's going to be 300 people there. Alex doesn't know how to build for that.
No, I'm very good at just winning small tournaments.
Quite the detriment there. Okay, cool. Anyway, I think we're all good here with the Knoxville Regional. You know, again, winner of the tournament, Kyle Livinghouse, with that team, the Kangaskhan Tornadus, Groudon Xerneas, Amoongus, and Incineroar. You know, good job to Kyle, you know, really showing his skill over these past few months here. Doing really well. And we will continue on to this season. Our next North American regional is going to be in Richmond, Virginia at the start of November. So we got a few weeks until then. But for now, we're going to move on to a different topic. And that is going to be that Justin, back in this back in the earlier parts of the summer, you were started writing essentially for Pokemon, the official Pokemon website and everything, and those were essentially previews for both the North America International Championship and then ultimately later Worlds in August. What can you tell us a little bit about that experience and, what all went into that and, tell us, what led up to it and everything.
Yeah, so back in May or so, which, was around the time that I first came onto the show with you guys, I got an email from the, I assume he's, the head of the, article writing team at, Pokemon. And he was asking me to be a part of a new series of articles they were trying for the North American International Championships, which was basically power rankings. They did this for both VGC and TCG. Basically, they, asked a group of, the top trainers, such as Aaron Traylor, Alex Gomez, Gabby Snyder, and Lee Provost, and myself. They wanted us to, send email in, a list of all the restricted pairs that we think would be strong going into NAIC, and then they sent us back, the list that they compiled from our suggestions, and they had us vote on them. And so once we voted, they took the votes, decided the rankings, and then, gave the five of us a restricted pair that we would, specifically write about. So I think for, North American internats, I was, probably had the most Rayquaza Kyogre experience. So that's what I ended up writing about. So that was pretty interesting getting to share my thoughts, and it was kind of a trial run. We didn't know how the community would receive this. And so we were kind of secretive about it back then. And then when the article dropped, everyone loved it. It was, we saw like a rare moment where everyone on Twitter was just very, very happy to see, something like this happen. And I was pretty excited that I got to be a part of it. And I am grateful for, Pokemon for that experience. And they did end up bringing us back for the World Championships. And this time, Aaron Traylor and Wolf had just built the team that ended up winning NAIC. So, Aaron got his, the Rayquaza Kyogre duties. So instead, I wrote about Solgaleo and Rayquaza, which was an archetype I was very interested in going into Worlds.
Our Worlds team.
I ended up running that alongside Alex, and he got through day one and made it to day two, and I had an auto day two invite.
He cheated.
I did go positive, and I did come pretty close to cutting Worlds. So in partially having to write about Solgaleo and Rayquaza is kind of why I was testing it so much. So maybe that the project did end up influencing my decisions for Worlds as well. So
that's really cool. Because you kind of had to get some experience playing with it, that it helped you with but kind of irked you in that direction to use Solgaleo and Rayquaza. That's really cool. And you're saying how these essentially restricted duos were assigned to you after these votes had been taken?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Dang. So that process sounds so cool. I was gonna you stole my comment, but yeah, that process sounds really cool and involved. And I'm very surprised that it was this much back and forth before you actually just ended up writing. That's really cool.
Yeah, and so when we voted, we would kind of tell them which archetypes we were interested in, and so that was actually a really fun experience. I talk to Aaron a lot now, kind of about it, and we would kind of share our thoughts between each phase of the voting and nominations and things like that, and he also helped proofread my write-ups, and I did the same to him. It was a really fun experience. I'm glad I got the opportunity to do it. They told us afterwards that, they got overwhelming positive reception. So, maybe, Pokemon might, reach out to our community more often and, you know, try to get more content on their website like this. And it's, you know, I think it's a really awesome step in the right direction. You know, some people aren't happy with their decisions, but I do think they actually care, you know, about seeing VGC flourish. And I'm sure, you know, they're trying to do their best to, you know, make us happy.
Now, when these articles came out, I believe Steven and I did cover them on the show because it was really cool. And I told this story on the podcast then, I'm almost positive, but I'll just reiterate it here just in short. And I might have told you this personally, Justin, but when I first saw that it was titled Pokemon Video Game Power Rankings, I thought they had created kind of like how Smash Bros. Does it, where it was like a player power ranking system where they had put together the list of the strongest players in the North American region or something.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, this is going to be such a mess. This is going to be so awful. Oh boy. This will be cause so much drama. And I was like, nervously, literally the most nervous I've ever been scrolling something, like, who's it going to be? Who's going to be number one? What is this? And then all of a sudden I see like Groudon Xerneas and I'm like, oh, them. Okay.
Of course. Yeah. You know, I think it was like maybe in 2015 and 2016 where they would, going into the events, they would try to talk about, you know, specific players on the leaderboards going into the event. But I think, you know, recently they've shied away from that and would rather just, you know, talk about the teams going into the tournament, the metagame, things like that.
Oh, wait. And didn't Scott used to write those?
Yes.
And he...
Scott's big thing for Nugget Bridge, and I don't know, like, Pokemon would have some of that kind of stuff on the official website as an article, but I don't know if he was the, you know, primary author behind it.
Okay, I got name dropped in that one once or twice, and it, like, was such a big deal for me back then because I was a newer player, and that was, like, really, really cool. Have you guys ever gotten name dropped in it? Burns, do you remember?
I don't believe I have. I think I got mentioned in, you know, going into 2016 Nationals just because I was, like, 20th in championship points. So I was just kind of on the cusp of being able to make a run at a Day 2 invite. So I might have gotten mentioned in a list of players, but not specifically or anything like that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, to answer your question, it's yes to both. Both for Nugget Bridge and the official Pokemon ones.
Oh, you okay? You did, yes.
Yeah. One thing I want to just say about the whole these previews, these articles that are going up, essentially these different kind of power rankings for these tournaments, is that, like Justin was saying, they had a really positive response to them. I also really like these a lot. You know, it's really cool because all of these writers, I knew who all these people were, right? I've either met all of them before. The only person I have not actually, you know, met in person was Lee Provost. So, you know, I know everybody else, which is really cool. And it's, you know, kind of, you know, it's really neat in your game when you know all these people and you're seeing the work they put in, you know, for the official site here. I think it's an amazing thing to see. And Justin, I'm sure you're, you know, elated being part of this experience.
Oh yeah, definitely. When I got reached out to, it was, I was like, you know, in the middle of my snowball run. So it does make sense why, you know, they would ask me to be on their team, but, you know, there were also a bunch of other players, you know, ahead of me, and they could have been asked to do this as well. So the fact that they, you know, reached out to me is, you know, nothing against those players. I'm sure, you know, they would have been amazing as well, but it's just such an honor to, like, you know, be picked to do this by Pokemon, you know. Especially since we do have a ton of players that I'm sure would be amazing at this.
It's just great that they're, you know, putting a bit more effort into, I don't know, getting the word out about the game, you know, and going about it in such a, I think, in my opinion, a positive way. You know, reaching out to the professionals, whether it's the commentators or the experienced players, to get their opinions on the state of the metagame. Or something else that I kind of wanted to touch on just in general while we're on this topic is the new like Pokemon Twitter accounts. They've been really cool. The Play Pokemon is one, as well as the Arcanine Lab one. They're both very active. They're both, you know, always talking about different stuff in the competitive games. And I definitely recommend, if you are, you know, a follower of the VGC scene, you give both of those accounts a follow, because what I think they're doing is great, and it's just going to be, it's nice that there's like this official Pokemon account to get the word out. It's actually the closest we've ever gotten, I think, to having a direct contact to somebody at TPCI outside of like voicing your concerns to a TO at an event or like submitting a support ticket. Like, this is just a really cool new medium.
Yeah, if there's something that you need to make a comment on or reply to, you know, maybe leave it in one of their, you know, tweets or posts that they put there on the Play Pokemon Twitter. You know, honestly, you know, sometimes a lot of the stuff they post is kind of corny, but, you know, I like that. It's kind of cute. It's funny. So it's nice that there's a mix of all the games in there. So there's Trading Card, Pokken, Tournament DX. I'm sure they probably had other stuff Maybe it is all they have at the moment, but it'd be really cool to just follow those two accounts, because you know bigger and better stuff is coming soon with Sword and Shield, so you know those are going to be very active. So like we mentioned before, is, you know, you do all the tournament, or you come up with this new compelling strategy that, you know, essentially becomes popular in the new metagame, you know, they might mention you on that account, which I think would be quite an honor.
I do have to say, the account did mention all of the writers' Twitter handles, which was pretty awesome, in my opinion.
Ooh, okay, so you were on which one? Which Twitter? The Play Pokemon one?
Play Pokemon, yeah.
Ooh, nice. That's so good.
I know, it's so cool.
That's awesome.
Justin's the real deal. You know, he's in with the big kids now.
Oh my god, he's talking to me? He's talking to me?
I made it.
Yeah. Yeah, what an experience though. That must be so cool to be writing, you know, writing for Pokemon League. You can write that in a put that in your resume now, or just as a, you know, a fun fact, cool fun fact about yourself.
Yeah.
Oh man, I already have Pokemon in my resume.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that already, right? That you had Pokemon in there.
I probably did mention it on this podcast for people that actually listen to all the episodes and not just like, you know, listen to one and done because they're like, oh, this is not my thing.
Oh, you know what we should talk about sometime is just like how to implement your competitive Pokemon means in a resume.
Oh no, how about not?
that'd be such a fun topic to cover.
Yeah, we can teach people how to, you know, how to use that and get a job.
Exactly. Remember to use those active verbs when you're writing out your accomplishments in this endeavor here.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you know, really cool stuff with the NEIC previews and the Worlds preview and just Play Pokemon Twitter, all a lot of cool things. I think we're going to move on from here and close out with a question. So just going to read this out here really quick. This comes from Ethan, also from our email, and this says, "Hey, my name is Ethan, and I recently discovered your podcast and absolutely love it. So I've been trying to understand competitive Pokemon, and I already understand the breeding side of competitive Pokemon, the IVs and EVs, etc. But I was wondering, what's your thought process for when you construct a team? Can you make a team that is not considered the meta and do fairly well? And is another question here is, and is there any point in doing rating battles online? Like, for example, can you get into the international competition by doing good online, or is that more just for fun? Sorry if that's too many questions, but I really enjoy your podcast and hope you continue to do it." So, Ethan, thanks so much for the feedback. And I'm just going to cover the last point in the last question here that Ethan asks us. And that's the one about the point in doing rating battles online in terms of like qualifying for, I think he's asking about either the ICs or Worlds. Those don't have any like actual point of getting you straight into those tournaments unless you're like Japan. Or you're fighting in the online competitions for championship points. The battle spot, for example, is really just for practice and just to play on there for fun. Even with the ICs, the points you can win from there are not going to count for, or that's not going to be enough to get you into Worlds alone. So
to avoid any confusion, Steven, don't say ICs, because if they're a newer player, they might mix up that we have two uses for the verb for the abbreviation IC. So yeah,
that's true. We just have the general ICs and then all of the internationals, which are the OCIC, EUIC, NAIC, and LAIC.
EIEIO.
So, yeah, the online competitions would be international challenges, whereas the tournaments themselves are international championships.
There we go. Thank you.
Yes.
But yeah, in terms of the rating battles, mostly for fun. Some of those you can get points from, not enough to actually qualify for Worlds. Japan, different story because they have a totally different system where that does matter for them. So different for their different case for them.
All right, now I'm going to avoid the questions altogether and cover the last point that says, sorry if that's too many questions, because if that was ever the case, I would be a happy, happy man. There are never enough questions. Thank you so much for submitting them. We don't have a line of questions. In fact, you're first in line. That's why we're covering it. I guess they're second in line. We already did have another one in this episode. Two questions in an episode. So exciting. But yeah, the meat of their question is, what is your thought process when constructing a team? Can you make a team when it's not considered meta and do fairly well? And the answer to that is, of course, we see players do well with off-meta teams all the time. In fact, a lot of the times to push the meta forward, you have to come up with something new. And then maybe that team does end up becoming meta. For example, Kyle Livinghouse, who just ended up winning the regional we were talking about with the archetype called Kang Torn. He was, you know, one of the premier players to be running this archetype. He piloted at Madison, which was one of the first regionals, I believe, that we saw it have success in. And then it just kind of took more and more events by storm, getting a lot of top cut and strong finishes. And yeah, I think, like, you know, it just depends on what do you get out of the game. What, you know, in the end of the day, Pokemon is a competitive game, but it is about having fun. You know, you don't just use teams as a means to an end. You know, you got to pick something that you're going to enjoy. Because as you can see in the top eight of this event we just talked about at Knoxville, there was a variety of different teams. Some of them were similar, but, you know, they all had different ways to approach the game. And the decision to make that, or the person to make that decision, is you. You have to decide what works for you success-wise, what works for you fun-wise. And so that's really what it comes down to when you're constructing a team. And of course, do lots and lots of testing to make sure it works. You know, don't just say, I really want to use Buizel because he's one of my favorite Pokemon, and I'm going to put him on a team and hope he does well. You know, you gotta put things online, you know, either, you know, or like test it on Showdown or build it in game and do those practice games, those rating battles on BattleSpot. And once you get something that you're confident is working enough, then that's when it's event ready.
Yep. And I would like to mention that, you know, we've got Sword and Shield coming up in a month. Once that releases and we start playing that, nothing's going to be meta. It's going to be brand new. We're all going to be trying to learn new stuff. So that's definitely like the perfect opportunity to try and, build something that you like, and you know, maybe if someone does well with a team they like, other people will see it and then it will become meta.
Yeah, so work on establishing it yourself, you know, tread new ground, and that way, you know, especially, yeah, that Sword and Shield, there is, it's a flat, like, what do you call it, even playing ground. You know, everybody is starting fresh. It's going to be so much fun. And yeah, if you're just, you know, getting into VGC, get the hang of things now, but Sword and Shield is when it's really going to become interesting.
Yeah, I really like these points. Just all about, you know, there is no metagame when Sword and Shield starts. Like, we as a entire player base are going to form that. That's, you know, everyone worldwide who's playing competitively, either on the Sword and Shield, however their new online system is going to be, or eventually when all this information gets to the online simulators, which we're probably going to have on Showdown still. But kind of the first question is, you know, what's your thought process for when you construct a team? Is just in general, like, just start with an idea. Start with an idea. Is there a certain Pokemon you want to use, a certain strategy you want to use? A good question for this year, is there a certain restricted do you want to use? Start with that. And then you can kind of build your team around all of those separate principles. And like Alex mentioned, you know, test out your strategy, what you want to utilize. But the very basis of it is, what is your idea? What is your basic concept you want to go with? Do you want to run a hyper offensive team? Do you want to use a trick room team? Do you want to use a team that just, you know, can handle as many other strategies as possible. You know, way back in the day, known as Good Stuffs. Now we call it, what do they call it on the official Pokemon website? They used to say it was like a read and react team. That's what it was. You're kind of doing that with any kind of team you're building anyway, but...
Steven, how old is that term?
What, Good Stuffs?
No, read and react team. And Burns, react. Help me out here. Is this anything you've ever heard?
I've never heard of it.
So,
what?
Let me just talk about this really quick. So, a term we used to use in the early years is of just like your most average vanilla Pokemon that were really good. They were called Good Stuffs, right?
Yeah.
And then once stuff officially got, once Pokemon started writing more official things, that term was essentially translated over into not Good Stuffs, but a read and react team. And I guess that's also gone and phased out. I'm not kidding. Like, there are other people out there who I know will help back me up on this.
I'm Googling the words Pokemon, read, and react team.
Oh my god. No, it's a read and react team. You know, R-E-A-D?
I didn't do R-E-E-D. No, but I found nothing just from Googling this. It seems like we'd have to do a deep, deep dive to find this.
Probably it'd be in some old Nugget Bridge forums, which are also down. You know, this kind of the same way once the Pokemon year resets, they kind of archive everything on the website and nothing can be found anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, really quick, what are your thought processes for when you build a team?
I mostly start with, you know, maybe take a Pokemon or, you know, a set of Pokemon that I think are good. Like, maybe I say, you know, I think clicking Water Spout with Kyogre is really good. And then I would think of, you know, ways I would, you know, try to enable Kyogre clicking Water Spout. So, obviously, since a lot of people use Rayogre, that's because, you know, what if there's a Groudon and it stops you from clicking Water Spout? Well, Rayquaza comes in and airlocks the field and, you know, Kyogre can now Water Spout and one-hit KO the Groudon. So, there are other ways to, you know, enable that. Maybe if you wanted to run, like, a Cloud9 Golduck, and then you would be able to run a different restricted Pokemon, or maybe you wanted to run Mega Altaria and start off with, like, Cloud9, and then once you've KO'd the Groudon, you can Mega Evolve and run Mega Altaria. So there's a lot of ways to think about trying to use different strategies to enable your you know, linchpin Pokemon to do what you want them to do. So, you know, some of them might not be as strong as more conventional strategies, but it never hurts to, you know, think about different ideas to accomplish your goals, which, you know, ultimately is to take knockouts and win the game. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I get started. And then
my closest relation to that story is, and I kind of should have put this in when we were talking about Knoxville, but, as I had kind of made apparent to people that were at the event or who follow me on Twitter, I have never actually used Rayogre ever before. Back in 2016, I was still a bit in my snowflake phase where I was just like, oh, I'm not going to touch a standard team. I'm Alex Underhill. I'm cool. I can build original stuff. And then it came around this year, and I've just been a Zerndon player for pretty much the whole year. I've ended up using Solgray at Worlds, which is a little bit out there, you know. That's like a bit more of a interesting archetype, even though it was in the top five in Justin's preview article, the one that he helped write. But yeah, then it just, you know, you don't just build for the format, and sometimes you build for the tournament. In this case, what Justin and I talked about for our process for this tournament was that we really wanted to make sure we beat Groudon. We, no joke, we kind of made a list of like all the players that we thought we were going to the tournament, and the list was looking all Groudon. We were just like, everybody's bringing Groudon. We need a Kyogre here. He's going to make our life a lot easier. So that was kind of how we came to that for this specific event. But just in general, it's mostly about finding an idea of, you know, a concept that I really like. For Worlds, you know, Snorlax was a big part of what ended up, you know, creating that team. The team that I used for most of the format was Parish, and that's just because I've always enjoyed Parish Trap. I think it's a really cool strategy. You know, you kind of find these concepts, and then you construct around them. You refine until it, you know, ultimately becomes a complete product.
Yeah, so Ethan, that's a really good, you know, that first question's a really good one that we could go really deep into, you know, that thought process between behind team building, essentially. So I don't, we're kind of out of time at this point, but this is something we're certainly going to revisit in the future as we go along here with the show. But Ethan, thanks so much for the feedback and for the questions. They are, you know, really, really glad to answer these. These are a lot of fun to do. So thank you both to Alex P. and to Ethan. And one last thing I want to do before we close up the show is just to give a shout out to Don from Florida and from Justin from Ohio. So the two of you, I said hello to me at the Knoxville Regional, just talking about the show and everything. So it was nice to meet the two of you. Thanks so much for, you know, talking about the show a little bit, for the feedback. And I just want to give you a shout out. It was nice to meet you.
Team Justin.
Yeah. Team Justin's the best, but you know, yeah, thank you to the both of you for, you know, saying hi and just talking at the regional. That was a lot of fun. Lastly, we just want to thank Justin here, the one on our show.
You mean Justin for... Burns?
Yes, I know which
his one last it name's is. Not here.
Justin here. But yeah, the one and only Justin that is on this show right now. Thank you for being on our show. We really appreciate that. It means a lot with to spend your time with us.
Well, I'm happy that you guys invited me back for, you know, a second run. And yeah, I had a great time. It was a lot of fun stuff to talk about.
Yeah, you definitely improved over the last time.
Yeah, true.
Alex throwing the shade there. You did a great job, both go arounds. That's all I need to say is thank you, and you did great. Now, you can find our show in a variety of different places. Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. Remember to leave us a review in those places to help with visibility. Tell your friends about this show if you think this is a show they would like about competitive Pokemon. You can also send your feedback, comments, and questions to our email, vgchypervoice@gmail.com. You can also find the show on Facebook and on Twitter at The Hypervoice, where you can message us there as well. Now, you can also find all three of us personally on Twitter as well. You can follow me at Super Morioka. And Alex, where can people follow you?
Alola. Oh, wait. You can follow me at LexiconVGC.
And Justin, where can people follow you?
I am at just Mr. Burns.
Excellent. Well, that's where you can find all of us. Everyone, thank you so much for listening to our show. We hope you enjoyed it. And stay tuned for more of The Hypervoice.
Do I need to say Alola again?
Yes.
Alola.